From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Whether you're in your golden years or not, with luck, one day you will be. And chances are good it will take a doctor or two and some pills to keep you ticking. To pay for that, you may well need Medicare. But the government program that backstops seniors' health costs is in big trouble. To save it, President Bush last night began to unveil his plan for Medicare reform. But will it work? And will it work for you? Tonight on Point, Medicare goes under the knife, and sooner or later, you'll care what's cut out. But first tonight, an update on the U.S. military's preparations for war with Iraq. In his State of the Union address last night, President Bush made his case for a U.S. attack and said that the time for Iraqi President Saddam Hussein to disarm is drawing to a close. Peter Spiegel is defense correspondent for the Financial Times. I asked him to lay out the U.S. administration's timetable for war.
I think what we're going to see is February is the month of diplomacy. We're going to see Powell show up at the U.N. on the 5th. We're going to see, I think, an interim report from some of the inspectors in mid-month, May 14th, 15th. But I think right after then, we're going to see the U.S. push possibly for a second resolution. The U.K. in particular has really sort of put its foot down saying they want a second resolution. And to be honest with you, I don't think the U.S. wants to go sort of out of step with the U.K. on this. So I think we'll try to see a second resolution near the end of the month to validate war. And I think both the U.S. and the U.K. have said, if it is a matter of one person, one country, it's always France that everyone suspects, holds that up, that they are willing to sort of lead this coalition of the willing. People have sort of guessed at different dates. I don't think anyone really knows for sure. There is the interesting news that the March 3rd is the new moon in the Arabian Desert, which means it will be the darkest day of the month. I think if you look at the progress of the way troops have begun moving to the region, it looks like at least another month to get everything in position.
A new moon means dark.
Completely dark, exactly. And the U.S. likes to, particularly in air combat, likes to use its very sophisticated abilities at night in the dark, which are probably our best technological advantages over any other military.
Now, we've heard recently about something called A-Day, I guess Attack Day. And then, of course, we saw in the Gulf War the long buildup, the air campaign, 100 days or so, softening up Iraq's troops. How are these things likely to intersect? Is it likely to begin with a long drum roll of weeks of air campaign or something shorter?
No, I think there's a couple of reasons why we're not going to see that long air campaign. I would believe it's only going to be a matter of days. First of all, we have to remember the Gulf War was, 11, 12 years ago. The sophisticated weapons that we have now in terms of guiding munitions, particularly in the air campaign, so far surpass what we had during the first Gulf War that it really takes far fewer planes and far fewer days to hit as many targets as we did last time. Also, we have to remember, this is an Iraqi military that has not had any real funding or training or, maintenance for about 11 years.
So what's the thunderclap likely to be? Do you imagine an A-Day, a sudden attack? We hear about 300 cruise missiles that are supposed to fall on Baghdad on one night. Is it likely to begin with a great blitz like that?
I think it probably is. I think probably less likely cruise missiles, more stuff coming from what's called JDAMs, which are these new guided munitions that are guided by GPS. I mean, it's one of the greatest technological inventions. It basically just a kit that straps onto an old dumb bomb and creates it into a GPS-guided missile. And it's incredibly cheap to make, and they're turning them out right now at Boeing's plant in St. Louis, and they have a whole lot of them made. Those weapons are primarily the reason why I think the air campaign is going to be so short. I think we'll see the ground campaign start almost immediately thereafter, and frankly, the two could go on simultaneously. I think we'll get 2 or 3 days of airstrikes, the ground campaign starting shortly thereafter, and it wouldn't be surprising to see the air campaign to continue as these tanks move through the southern and northern desert.
What about the anticipated duration here? The kind of quiet drumbeat, the sort of off-the-record implication, is that we're headed for a very quick victory. The suggestion is even a matter of days. Is that realistic?
It depends on who you talk to. There is one complicating matter, and this is the question on everyone's mind: how much will Saddam's army put up a fight, particularly these Republican Guards and Special Republican Guards in Baghdad? The great fear, and I've done a lot of reporting on this, frankly, is that we're going to be mired in some sort of urban warfare. And despite what the Pentagon says, and despite what General Myers has said repeatedly, we are not good at that. We have never been good at that. We have not really advanced our tactics or our technologies for urban warfare since Mogadishu. And we all know how badly that went in 93. Everyone's seen the movie and read the book now.
Yep.
I happen to believe, you talk to people who have seen the military intelligence, that we're not likely to see that because Let's remember back at the Gulf War where we had 70, 80,000 troops surrender on day one. Mm-hmm. This is an army that is incredibly demoralized 11 years later, remember. Their equipment's bad. In some cases, we've had reports out of the north where the troops have to get to the front in taxis because they can't even fuel their armored personnel carriers.
So it sounds, Peter Spiegel, like you're ready to buy the matter of days vision of how this might turn out.
If I were a betting man, yes. But again, when you talk to uniformed people in particular, they always like to plan for worst-case scenarios. And you know what? A lot of that is dependent on the assumption that Saddam's troops will surrender, and it's a very dangerous assumption. I think it's likely to happen, but there is certainly a good odds that it won't happen, and it could drag on for a matter of weeks.
Even if many do surrender, it doesn't take an entire army to release weapons of mass destruction, if indeed Saddam Hussein has them, the nerve agents, the anthrax. You've written only recently that the U.S. Army and military generally may not have effective chemical warfare suits.
That's very true. There have been reports by both the Pentagon's Inspector General, by the General Accounting Office, that have basically said, we can't account for where a lot of these suits are. We know there are defective suits in the system. We don't know where they are. Some units don't have gloves, some don't have boots. So there is a great risk at that. Now, that is offset by a couple things. One, last time we know from debriefing of Iraqi generals that the reason they did not use chemical weapons, and they were poised to do it, they had them in the battlefield, was they felt that the Iraqi army performs far less well in that condition than the U.S. Army could have.
Meaning once the chemicals were out there, they'd all be vulnerable to it.
Exactly. I mean, you can't direct this stuff pretty well. The wind starts blowing and all of a sudden your troops are dead. Secondly, I think we have a pretty good chance of this sort of what they call PSYOPs, the psychological warfare that the Bush administration is doing very effectively, you know, targeting some of these Iraqi generals and saying, if you order the use of chemical weapons, you will be war criminals. They have tried to separate Saddam and his close circle from the army commanders in the field and say, look, we will go after Saddam, we will go after his tight circle, but we're not going to go after you, you field general, if and unless you use these chemical weapons, that you could be part of a prosperous future of Iraq. That's a pretty convincing argument if I'm a general in the field, and I haven't been treated particularly well for the last 12 years, and my colleague was shot because he told a bad joke about Saddam Hussein or something along
those lines. And now the superpower says, come on over quick, and you may be all right. But for now, Peter Spiegel, we'll look for February diplomacy and have our antenna way up in the dark of that March new moon, March 3rd.
That would be my timetable.
Peter Spiegel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Peter Spiegel is defense correspondent for the Financial Times. He spoke with us earlier from Washington. In his State of the Union speech last night, President Bush put Medicare reform front and center on his domestic agenda, right behind the economy.
Healthcare reform must begin with Medicare. Medicare is a binding commitment of a caring society.
Today, that caring society includes almost 40 million seniors on Medicare. The nearly bankrupt government program is in critical condition. It doesn't cover preventive medicine, and it doesn't cover pills. Without massive overhaul, it definitely won't cover the 76 million boomers who are closing in on age 65. But reforming Medicare is going to cost. The cost of prescription drugs, the cost of all American health care is rising at a rate of 10% a year or more. The Bush plan wants to nudge Medicare toward the private sector, moving many seniors out of traditional coverage and into managed care. Is that good? Is that necessary? Is it a sly retreat from guaranteed care? Seniors, how's Medicare working for you today? Boomers and juniors, what do you expect to find when you turn 65? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me in the studio tonight is Stuart Altman, professor of national health policy at Brandeis University and a former member of the National Bipartisan Commission on the Future of Medicare. Good evening and welcome, Stuart Altman.
Good evening.
It's great to have you with us. You listened to the president, along with all of us, last night. Before we get into the details of where he wants to push this program, explain to us where the program stands. Why is there so much concern over the present health and future of Medicare?
Let me just slow you down a little bit. I think the rhetoric needs to be toned down. This program is not in crisis. It has problems. And yes, the problems will get more serious as the number of seniors, people reach 65, the boomers hit. But I think
not in crisis, but we read the Comptroller General of the U.S., David Walker, saying Medicare is unsustainable in its present form. I think we don't know how to interpret that.
I think there's a lot of rhetoric flying around, including from them. I think you don't want to scare people beyond where they should be.
Good. Let's get it just right.
That doesn't mean that there's not a problem, and it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be making changes. Mm-hmm. And as you pointed out correctly, Medicare suffers from some big gaps. And, of course, the biggest one is that it doesn't cover outpatient prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. It also has a very meager long-term care benefit. And so here we have, on the one hand, the need to expand the program to make it modern for what people need mm-hmm. who are seniors. And on the other hand, we're bringing on a large number of people, and we do have a financial crisis looming out there if we don't do anything and we don't raise the taxes.
Stuart Altman, who is covered by Medicare?
Right, that's it. Let me back up a second. For the most part, Medicare covers individuals when they reach 65. It has a few individuals who are quite needy who suffer from end-stage renal disease or are very disabled. So, but primarily it is seniors who've reached 65 and who've worked at some point during their life enough to sort of qualify for the program, which essentially makes over 90 to 95% of those who reach 65.
So 95% of all Americans who reach age 65 at some point take advantage of Medicare. Do affluent Americans use this?
It is a non-income related program. I just got my Medicare card. Mm-hmm. I'm on Medicare. So will Bill Gates be on Medicare. It is designed on what we call a social insurance model, which is it is non-income related. We pay into it while we work, and we get the benefits when we reach 65. 65 is somewhat arbitrary. It goes all the way back to Bismarck in the 1800s. At that point, the people died at 45,
right.
And
so
65 was very old. I like to think of 65 as sort of approaching middle age. Surely
we think. I want to pin this down just a little more. For Americans 65 or older, are you suggesting then that the majority of their health care costs are paid by Medicare? When would a senior use Medicare? When would he or she prefer to go to a doctor and not get involved with Medicare? What makes the difference?
All right. First of all, there are two parts of the Medicare program. One is called Part A, which covers hospital care and institutional care, which everyone is eligible for immediately by dint of having put in the benefits. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody uses that program.
Okay.
It is a very good program. It pays you can go to any hospital. The relationship between the program and the hospital, I don't care who you are, you use it. And it covers every hospital, so you don't have to worry mm-hmm. about which doctor is
right.
and stuff like that. It has, there's a small deductible. You pay a one-day deductible. Then it covers all your care through 60 days. And then if you have to be on longer, there's a co-insurance.
So it's great coverage.
It's good coverage, but there is a limit, and I want to point this out. Mm-hmm. If you wind up in a hospital for a very long period of time, which is a very small number of people, mm-hmm. we either make it through our hospital or we don't make it.
Right.
So the idea that you wind up, but if you wind up there for more than 90 days and you use up what's called a lifetime reserve of 60 mm-hmm. days, you could wind up where Medicare doesn't cover you anymore.
And then you're naked. But everybody's
naked, but for the most part, hospitals just eat that. And as I said, it's a very mm-hmm. small. So everybody is eligible for that.
All right.
Okay. The second piece of the program is called Part B, and that is you can volunteer to join that program.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who are seniors join it. The people who don't join it are people who usually have coverage either from their job or from their previous job. And this covers physician care. It covers home care. It covers a variety of tests and procedures. As I said, it is still a good program, but it has much more restrictions in terms of it has a copayment, it has deductibles.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can go to any doctor you want that is signed up with the program. Until very recently, that meant every doctor except for very few. Now there are a few places where some doctors are saying, I don't want to be part of Medicare.
Stuart Altman, in a nutshell, because we're coming up on a break, why the sense of urgency around changing, reforming, fixing Medicare then?
There is no immediate urgency. What is looming ahead is the fact that you will have these 77 million and the feeling that Medicare does not control utilization and the only way it can keep its costs down is by squeezing on the payment rates. And what the president is saying is, you want me, you want the Congress to add a multi-hundred-billion-dollar addition in prescription drugs to a program that I believe is not poorly designed. No way am I going to do that.
Something's got to give here.
Exactly.
And the boomers are pressing the issue, as they do on so many fronts. We're talking tonight about fixing the Medicare mess without making it worse. Is Medicare working for you today? If you had the option of private managed care, would you take it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about fixing the Medicare mess without making it worse. President Bush has a plan on the table, or climbing onto the table. The president called Medicare last night the binding commitment of a caring society. Do you believe that he believes that? And is Medicare working for you today? Are you confident it will be there when you hit 65? My guest tonight is Stuart Altman. He's professor of national health policy at Brandeis University and a former member of the National Bipartisan Commission on the Future of Medicare. So, Stuart Altman, clearly there are a lot of knives out around this issue. Why is reform, why is change so controversial? And lay out the battlefield for us, if you
All
would.
Right. Okay, so we have this program, which is for the most part, most people get it through what's called traditional Medicare, where they go to the doctor or the hospital, and the bill goes to the Medicare program. But a growing number of individuals were choosing to sign up for what we call Medicare Plus Choice or Medicare Managed Care. The advantage to them of going into a program which more managed the utilization is that these plans offered them better benefits, particularly lower copayments, no premiums. I needed to point out there's a premium attached to Part B that they have to pay in these programs. They didn't have to pay that. Plus, they got better prescription drug benefits. It was a popular program. Now, of course, there's been a lot of negative feelings about managed care, but for the people in Medicare who joined it, it was actually a plus. Unfortunately, what happened is over the last 5 to 6 years, the payments from the government to these managed care plans didn't keep up with their costs, and so the managed care plans began to cut back on those benefits, and then many of them just dropped the program altogether. And so now we have a crisis where the people who are counting on managed care to provide them with extra benefits are being forced back into Medicare. Everybody wants prescription drugs because it's a needed program. More and more of us are finding that when we get into Medicare, we don't have extra coverage to pay for it. Mm-hmm. If we want to buy what's called supplemental coverage with prescription drugs, it's very expensive. So the key issue here is, as we go forward, should we add a major hundreds of billions of dollars of new benefits into a program, traditional Medicare, which is wonderful for the average person, but has very little constraints on utilization, has very little – doctors and patients can pretty much get whatever they want.
Therefore, it's expensive for the country.
It turns out to be very expensive. And unlike every other country, by the way, we talk about socialized medicine. You can't do that in any other country. They have much tougher restrictions on their program.
But you're saying that the toe dip that the Medicare Plus took into managed care turned out to have big problems. And last night, what we heard President Bush saying, at least as I understood it, was, let's try some more managed care. We want to tempt you over with prescription drug coverage, but you're going to be coming into something more like an HMO structure.
Understand where the problem was. The problem was two parts. The problem... For not everybody should be in managed care. Managed care requires a discipline. It is where the answer is no. You may not be able to go to every doctor. You may not be able to go to every hospital. And there is some restrictions on the care. Now, if they do a good job, hopefully the restrictions aren't on life-threatening, important stuff like that. But it requires a discipline. In return for that discipline, you get better benefits. The reason why the Medicare Plus Choice program is in so much trouble is that it turns out the government isn't a great partner. And it began to squeeze down or not pay the rates that these managed care companies needed in order to function. And they, being private businesses, for-profit and not-for-profit, said, you know, I can't do this anymore. I'm dropping out. That's where the problem was.
But isn't that where the fear lies, that by hook or by crook, this guarantee of care will slide into a managed system where benefits are no longer guaranteed, where the system just isn't working out and people can't count on being backstopped by the government?
Well, you can always go back, understand what the president said. Now, I have problems with what the president said, but let's understand it and let's give it its due. He is going to keep the traditional program. He's not going to do away with it. I was very pleased that he did that. There were a number of legislatures in 1994 that just wanted to end Medicare. They just didn't believe it was an important part of our program. I happen to be a very strong believer in Medicare. So understand, he said we will always have that. So we're creating this new set of options which people can belong to. And there's not going to only be managed care. Mm-hmm. There's going to be different forms. There's going to be what we call PPOs. There's going to be a private insurance plan. It's not only going to be managed care.
Stuart Upman, let's listen to just a bit of what the president had to say.
Seniors happy with the current Medicare system should be able to keep their coverage just the way it is. And just like you, the members of Congress and your staffs and other federal employees, all seniors should have the choice of a health care plan that provides prescription drugs.
Mr. Daltman, sounds great. Just like these United States senators, you're going to be covered. It's going to be beautiful. But we have seen critics of this approach saying that this will inevitably shift the cost of health care onto the backs of those who need it most, that those who need more will have to pay more, perhaps more than they can afford.
Well, let's understand. I mean, first of all, I mean, let's understand what the president was saying. I mean, he slid over some really important stuff here. He said, you know, you want to stay in traditional Medicare. Mm-hmm. You're going to stay in there, but there's going to be no prescription drugs. The only way you're going to get prescription drugs is to go into one of these new plans.
That's a powerful lure.
That is the powerful lure. That is not the way the federal employee plan works.
Mm-hmm.
That is just not true. There is a very low option plan, but it is not necessarily the way he put it. So the good part of his plan, I believe, is that it will offer people choices, but that the traditional program will stay in place.
Mm-hmm.
But what concerns a lot of people is that the only way you're going to be able to get drugs is to jump out of the existing into one of these other plans. I think when all gets said and done, there should be a compromise which will include some prescription drugs in the traditional program, but a much richer package of prescription drugs in these other plans. But understand the other side. If people think they're going to get a full prescription drug mm-hmm. benefit attached to the old Medicare program, I think they're going to be waiting a long time.
They're dreaming, maybe longer than they can afford to wait. Stuart Altman, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Joseph Antos. He joins us from Washington. He's a scholar in healthcare and retirement policy at the American Enterprise Institute and former assistant director for health and human resources at the Congressional Budget Office. Good evening and welcome, Joseph Antos.
Good evening. It's nice to be here. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks so much for joining us. Joseph Antos, you heard the president along with us last night. How do you see the challenge, the crisis? You use the word that you will. And do you think the president would be putting the country on the right track to address it?
Well, you know, Stuart really explained the issues very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not going to find a disagreement there. The question is, how is the president going to go about this? And will we really achieve the kind of thoroughgoing reform that I believe the program really needs? The president's proposal goes, I think, a long way towards bringing the proper kinds of incentives to health plans, to providers, and to beneficiaries by bringing the consumer really more into the game of deciding what kind of benefits do I want and what am I willing to pay for. I view the president's proposal, what we know of it so far, as a first step rather than as the final step towards the kind of reform that I think he's talking about.
But you know, Joseph Antos, that when people hear about being pulled into the proper incentives, many people will take that as a kind of shorthand or code for restricted health care, restricted services. The president of the UAW said in a press release today, of course, the president was in Michigan, that this is headed into a risky new way of doing things that could make things less stable, less reliable. Is this a nicely dressed up way of cutting back on what Americans will have in their golden years in terms of health care?
The proposal is to increase benefits for Medicare beneficiaries. I have a hard time seeing that what we now know to be the proposal mm-hmm. is a cutback. What it's attempting to do, I believe, is deal with the long-term problem that we're going to have to face of the spiraling costs of healthcare in general and the failure of the Medicare program to really meet all of the needs of seniors and disabled. The fact that we're talking today mm-hmm. about the need for a prescription drug benefit clearly indicates that the program needs some adjustment. It needs to become more flexible, more responsive to changes in healthcare practice, changes in what doctors recommend, changes in what patients see that they need. Now, let's kind of step ahead and see what kind of plan are we really talking about. If the president is really serious about giving seniors the same type of options that senators and congressmen have, let's look at what that really is.
We'd like to know.
There are a vast number of choices that are available to federal employees, your congressman. And every fall, your congressman looks at his choices, and by and large, what most people do is they join PPOs. They look at the list of providers that are available under the various plans. They look for their doctor. If they find their doctor, they see that, and they see that the premiums are reasonable, and they see that the benefits suit their needs. That's the kind of plan that they join.
But Stuart Altman's saying, get real, it's not going to be the same kind of bountiful table for ordinary citizens that it is for U.S. senators and congressmen.
No, I don't think that's what Stuart said at all. Stuart raised a concern that I think is a very legitimate concern about people who choose to remain in traditional Medicare and what their benefit package would look like. I think that's a very legitimate concern. However, I think there are ways to deal with this. I think that the traditional Medicare program also ought to become much more responsive to consumer demand and changing medical technology. That's what this debate is all about. Well, how do we get the entire Medicare program on the right track?
Please explain that, Stuart Altman. We're talking about consumer demand and changing technology. How does that factor in here?
Well, because if the traditional Medicare program just goes along, which says, okay, I'm going to pay for this, but there's a whole bunch of new technologies, I'm not going to pay for their experimental, and that's the way they keep their costs down, you could have people who, on one hand, get a lot of flexibility and freedom on traditional things, but are denied a whole bunch of other things. So I think what Joe is talking about and what I'm talking about is even the traditional program needs to become to change its structure. Now, I happen to believe it ought to include some prescription drugs in there, although the benefits should be less than in the managed care, because I think the managed care is going to do a better job in controlling costs and hopefully use some of those savings to turn into a larger benefit. And I think that's what the essence of the federal employee benefit is. If you go into a more restructured plan, and which has reduced flexibility but saves money, they then give you better benefits.
Joseph Antos, should baby boomers welcome this if this is the emerging face of Medicare as they will know it?
Baby boomers are concerned about whether Medicare is going to be there for them. By the way, I'm one of them. I'm as concerned as the next person. The Wall Street Journal last week had a poll that showed that 75% or so of people between the ages of 50 and 64 indicated their belief that the Medicare program needed substantial reform.
Joseph Antos, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Joseph Antos is a scholar in healthcare and retirement policy at the American Enterprise Institute. We're joined now by John Rother. He's director of legislation and public policy at the American Association of Retired People, AARP. John Rother, good evening and welcome.
Good evening.
Thanks so much for being with us. You heard the president last night. Do you like what you heard? Is this a way to maintain services for American seniors, or is this a way to rein in and cut back services?
Well, it's neither. We don't know what it is because we don't know what the proposal really is.
Mm-hmm.
We have some general idea of philosophy of approach, which is to rely more on private sector competition. But whether competition really operates to keep your health expenses down or not is really kind of controversial in healthcare. We found that actually in recent years, Medicare has done a very good job compared to the private sector of holding down year-to-year increases.
Mm-hmm.
So Medicare today may be doing a better job on cost, but the private sector plans are more flexible, and there's more discretion in adopting new technologies or new ways of managing healthcare. So it may be that it's a good thing to let beneficiaries choose which one they're more comfortable in.
So you like the looks of the very broad outline, without details, we grant you, that President Bush offered last night?
Well, we would not support requiring people to leave their doctors and join a managed care plan. I do not believe that's what the president is actually proposing. He said today that fee-for-service and PPO plans would be part of this proposal that he's talking about that would bring prescription drugs to people.
Yeah, there was some, at least rhetorical expansion, it sounded as though today, of the prescription drug offering.
Well, again, I don't, you know, we're guessing
pretty
here.
Vague.
I think apparently the administration is still drafting this plan, and the reason they didn't have anything to announce is that it's still not finished. And so, you know, what we say today may not be true tomorrow. So I want to be careful about it. But on the other hand, it's clear that the president, along with many leaders, especially on the Republican side in the Congress, do believe there should be a greater role for private plans that compete in Medicare, and that the program should move in the direction of the federal employee program. My only caution on that, I think choice is something that's a healthy thing.
Choice of doctor, choice of treatment.
Right, that's right. What people care about, though, is choice of doctor more than choice of plan. Mm-hmm. But my caution on it is, with choice, you're going to make it more expensive. And I think people should be prepared to be faced with the prospect of paying more money in order to be part of this new system that the president's talking about.
Well, there's the issue, John Rother. Bottom line, given this huge bulge of baby boomers who will be coming into the system, can they expect to have the same quality and range of care that seniors do today from Medicare? Or when it's all said and done, are expectations simply going to have to be diminished or not?
Well, one way to look at this is to look backwards 20 years. There are many more people in Medicare today, and healthcare is much more expensive today than it was 20 years ago. Mm. And yet we seem to be affording it without too much of a problem. If the economy continues to grow, I think we could probably absorb the necessary costs going forward. But, you know, I don't think we need to panic. On the other hand, when we compare our healthcare system with the rest of the world, it looks like we're spending a lot of money that maybe we don't have to spend on unnecessary procedures, on unnecessary technology, on a lot of waste in our system.
John Rother, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
John Rother is Director of Legislation and Public Policy at AARP. Stuart Altman, waste in our system?
Well, yeah. Well, there every indication is that we do use services that when you look at it, we really don't need to. And there's a lot of medical care that's being practiced which doesn't meet what we would call scientific or up-to-date medical. And the problem with the current Medicare program, it has no restrictions on either the doctor or the patient. And you got to be careful on the word choice. If you can go to any doctor and that doctor can prescribe any benefit and the program has to pay it and has no constraints, you know, it sounds wonderful to the patient, but that's where the mistakes are. That's
where the policy, it doesn't add up.
And understand something. Other countries don't do that. I mean, we can tell all the wonderful things about socialized medicine and government. That doesn't work like that. You go into a government-run program. They tell you which doctor to go to. They restrict the services that are available.
And one way or another, it looks like some kind of restrictions are coming to this country as well. We're talking tonight about fixing the Medicare mess without making it worse. Is Medicare working for you today? If you had the option of private managed care, would you take it? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
From Boston.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about fixing Medicare. Without making it worse, President Bush has a plan, or that big outline of a plan, on the table now as of last night's State of the Union address. What do you think? Do you fear a slippery slope for American seniors without health care guarantees? Would prescription drug coverage be worth a little Medicare privatization to you? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight is Stuart Altman, Professor of National Health Policy at Brandeis University. And right now on the phone, Barry's calling from Salem, New Hampshire. Hi, Barry. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening. I want to bring up a point that it's been mentioned but not often enough, that there's a cutoff as to how many people are actually paying into the Medicare program. I think it's like $88,000 a year. If you earn more than that, you don't pay in.
If you earn more than $88,000?
That's correct.
Are you sure it's not the other way around?
I am positive that at that point you pay no more into the system. you max out, at that point, your Medicare is not increased after that point.
And you'd like to see people, in any case, paying no matter what their income?
Yeah, absolutely, and let them, when it comes time to take out of the system, they should be done on a means basis. Everybody should pay into the system. There should be no limitation. Mm. The more money you make, the more you pay in, period.
Barry, stand by. I want to get some clarification from Stuart Altman here. Who pays what, Stuart Altman?
I don't think that's correct. That used to be correct. There is a limitation on what Social Security you pay into, but Medicare tax now is unlimited with respect to your income.
And do we pay it throughout our working lives?
You pay it throughout your working life, and as much as you make, the tax stays on. It's a much smaller tax than Social Security. So there is, he's correct in terms of Social Security, but it's no longer correct with respect to Medicare.
So it's, in that case, Barry, it sounds like it's already taking more from folks who make more.
I thought it was phased out. I'd have to look at the tax law a little bit more closely, but maybe the thing to do is to get those people that earn more money to pay more into the system.
Well, that's – but several years ago, they did just what you wanted for just the reason you wanted. I totally agree with you. And we now – it's unlimited with respect to Medicare.
And even with that, it's still not covering the
yes,
bills,
right.
And the hole's likely to get deeper. Barry, thanks for your call. Stuart Altman.
The thing you have to understand is that what most people don't know, they think, well, I paid in all this money. Mm-hmm. I want my Medicare program. Yeah. I have to understand, when I talked about Part B, Part B is funded three-quarters by general revenue. Mm-hmm. We get – the people who are now on Medicare are receiving benefits far in excess of what they paid in.
So once again, it's current taxpayers supporting American seniors.
It is not a we paid it in, we get it back. Mm-hmm. And so it is correct to say that the system is using up funds that are what we call general revenue funds.
And correct to wonder how much that system can bear as demand grows. Mary's calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just wanted to make some comments about your first caller. First of all, I'm almost 75 years old.
All right.
I'm a Medicare user.
Great.
I also have been a salesperson in the senior market for 15 years.
What do you see out there, Mary?
And first of all, what he made a comment about the Medicare supplements that people can purchase by choice as being too expensive or very costly. Well, I can tell you what I am paying right now. In addition to what's taken out of my Social Security check,
yes.
It's about $48 or $49 a month. I can't remember exactly from last year. Times 12, and I'm also paying $1,765 for a complete coverage for my Medicare supplement.
So this is your supplemental coverage, and how does that sit with you, Mary? Is that a lot? Is it a little? Is it
That comes to about $200, not quite $200, but $190 a month.
On your income, is that a heavy burden?
To me, that is not. It's not something I think is fun, but it certainly is. For $200 a month, I have complete Medicare coverage.
It sounds like you feel fairly comfortable with
that. And I think that your first caller ought to tell people that Part B also covers emergency rooms and outpatient stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that really troubles me is this whole concept of managed care.
Why?
Well, because it hasn't worked very well in the individual health area. And I think this is, according to my congressman, this was the whole choice program was really designed as a kind of a political payoff in some legislation a number of years ago. And I've watched customers of mine who were on those managed care programs suddenly being phased out and having no coverage.
So
I don't think that's good.
Yep, nobody thinks that's good. Mary, thanks for both of your perspectives there. Stuart Altman, here you can hear exactly the voice that politicians are terrified of around this country. Mary says, oh, it's working okay, but don't mess with it and don't force me into managed care. I don't like what I've seen there.
I totally agree with Mary, and I agree with all the Marys. I think it would be a gigantic mistake, and I hope it never happens, that we would force Mary or anybody else into managed care. I think the biggest problem we did in the private sector is we forced millions of people into a program they didn't want to be in.
But when prescription
that
drugs
does not...
are so expensive, aren't we effectively forcing people if that's where the coverage is?
Mary said that she is prepared to buy supplemental coverage, usually supplied either by Blue Cross or by some other carrier, to supplement her Medicare, and that's what she wants. And I think that's what she should get. Now, so that – and to be fair, I think there were some people that essentially wanted to end Medicare. What I'm pleased about what the president said last night, he is not going to end traditional Medicare program. So Mary's options would stay. The issue is whether the balance is correct. And there's one issue that has not been brought up, and I need to put it on the table.
Please.
It makes it more complicated. If the way the federal employee program works, and which is what he was talking about, is the federal government contributes a fixed amount of money each month to their employees, whether it's congressmen or federal workers. And then from that amount, you decide what you're going to buy. And if you want to buy one that will cover 90% of the cost, you only pay 10%.
Right.
Or if you want to buy one that only covers 70%, you're going to pay more.
Cheaper.
The fear that people have is that if the federal government goes to the federal employee for Medicare, they will keep the rate that Medicare pays low and force people to pay too much more. So what we have to – and the president hasn't talked about that. We need to make clear that this premium that's going to be paid for by Medicare so that it will be large enough that individuals will continue to be able to buy the current program and maybe with some prescription drugs. That is what we need to see in the details.
So that people don't fall off because it just gets too personally expensive.
That's right. And that – and you know, and I hope he doesn't do that. The other thing that I want to bring up that is a positive – a lot of the debate over prescription drugs during the bipartisan commission, which I voted against at the end, said the only way we're going to cover prescription drugs is only for poor seniors. I gather from what the president is talking about, it would be available potentially to all seniors, which I think is very important because, yes, it is true that there's some zillionaires that get a big chunk of it. But for the most part, seniors are not that wealthy. And, yes, they have some money. But – you know, the question is, how much should that coverage be? Should it be for every coverage, every drug, regardless of amount, or should there be deductibles and co-insurance? And we have to see what the president's going to add.
Stuart Altman, I hear trust and faith in your assessment so far. Are you worried about a slippery slope here that ends up taking the country away from that commitment to of a caring society to health care for seniors?
First of all, as I said, I believe strongly in Medicare, and I do believe it's a commitment. I also believe it is such a strongly politically supported program that no president and no Congress is going to move down that slippery slope. I am cautiously. I believe Medicare is the most vital program. In my own humble way, I think it's actually more important than Social Security. And every politician that's tried to mess around with Medicare too much has found themselves in alternative lines of work. And, yes, I believe that we're going to do okay, and Medicare is going to be available to the baby boomers.
The Republicans really got burned last time they moved
and they
in,
should've.
In the mid-'90s.
And they should have, and so should anybody else. Now, that doesn't mean that
because
we shouldn't make – because Medicare is a critical part, and it has allowed a whole generation of not only seniors to have some financial stability and to get decent medical care, but it's allowed their children and their grandchildren to feel better. So I would fight, and I'm the point. It's not me. I just think Americans will not let Medicare be destroyed. So yeah, I am optimistic.
Well, we'll watch this space, and we see President Bush taking a bit of a new tack here. Stuart Altman, we're heartened to hear your confidence in that, at least at this point tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Stuart Altman is professor of national health policy at Brandeis University and a former member of the National Bipartisan Commission on the Future of Medicare. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Just click on forums. In a moment, a baby boomer looks forward to a relaxing retirement. This is On Point. Centenarians are now the fastest-growing segment of the American population. The second fastest is the 85-plus age group. And seniors aren't just living longer, they're living more active lives. Thanks to new drugs and medical advances, retirement is now just as much golf and dinner parties, we're told, as it is playing bridge and taking naps. Oregonian newspaper columnist Susan Nielsen says, on the surface, that appears to be a good thing. But in this radio diary, she says she had been looking forward to slowing down.
Old age used to sound relaxing. Now it just looks exhausting. I used to look forward to growing old, to the time of getting my life back. No more rat race or meat market, No more working out or sucking in. Just a nice, slow rock on the porch and an open stretch of days ahead, leading away from convention and expectation. It was a pleasant fantasy built around that famous 1961 poem that begins, "When I am an old woman, I shall wear purple." But the days of wearing purple are over before they began. The new marching orders for old age, starting with baby boomers, are to stay forever young. Better than falling apart, of course, but it's a strange time warp. The longer we live, the further away old age gets. Makes me tired to think about it, the extra decades of keeping it together, the urgent dispatches from science muffling the whispers from nature to sit and rest. Makes me desperately want to wear purple, and I don't even like purple. The marching orders are most evident in television commercials. One current ad features the flat-tummied torsos of women prancing around in sexy panties. It looks like an advertisement for Victoria's Secret. Actually, it's an ad for bladder control problems. The hook? Don't let a little incontinence get in the way of your active lifestyle, you wild, sexy lace panty buying thing. Another commercial shows an attractive woman in her 40s or 50s or 60s, smoothed by Botox and Retin-A, getting ready for a dinner party. She slides on her nylons, fastens her pearl bracelet, and adjusts the hook on her little black dress. It's an ad for arthritis medicine. With a steady dose of drugs, the announcer implies, you can keep going out every night like you did in your 20s. The marketing strategy is brilliant. About 77 million baby boomers are hitting middle age, with one turning 50 every 7 seconds. They're starting to have health problems they once associated with old age and are in serious denial about it. Marketers know boomers are far more likely to buy products such as arthritis medication, teeth whiteners, incontinence pads, and wrinkle cream if such products are tied to youth and beauty. With arthritis and other creeping injustices under control, people are more likely to have an active lifestyle. The more active the lifestyle, the more products they'll buy to maintain the lifestyle. No rocking on the porch, that'd be a waste of panties. No watching Lawrence Welk at home eating tuna on toast in a patched housecoat. No, the job for eternally young consumers is to march ahead, buying yoga mats and vitamins and control top pantyhose. Men aren't exempt from this. They have to watch Bob Dole hawk Viagra, for example. The hidden subtitles in these ads are, I'm 79 years old, fought in the war and served in the Senate, and I still have the energy to make love to my wife every night. What's your excuse? In so many ways, this is progress. Old age used to be a death sentence. Retirement used to be a short break between the company wristwatch and the heart attack. Notions of beauty included only the garishly young. Now we have seasoned beauties such as Lauren Hutton and Clint Eastwood for inspiration. The 60s are the new 40s. The 80s are the new 60s. People are allowed to keep blooming rather than expected to wither, and thank heaven for that. And yet, the porch, the rocking chair. The open stretch of days ahead unencumbered by convention or expectation. The time to be still away from the rat race of eternal youth. I hate to say it, but I was looking forward to that. When I am an old woman, the poem by Englishwoman Jenny Joseph said, I shall wear purple with a red hat which doesn't go and doesn't suit me. I shall sit down on the pavement when I'm tired and gobble up samples in shops and press alarm bells and run my stick along the public railings and make up for the sobriety of my youth. In old age, the poem promised, we could wear terrible shirts and grow more fat and eat 3 pounds of sausages at a go. You know, that sounded good, too. Not the sausages part so much. Just the general freedom of saying enough, enough. And after years of keeping it together, joyfully letting go.
Susan Nielsen is a columnist with the Oregonian newspaper. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR.